Leo Ryan is a personal trainer and breeding coach and founder of InnateStrength.com. His healing journey has seen him go from chronic severe asthma to elite level performance in Buteyko method, Oxygen Advantage and Wim Hof method trainings. His client list goes from recreational sports people up to Olympic level athletes. Leo is a black belt in judo, and amongst a long list of extraordinary physical and mental challenges he has undertaken, he has climbed a mountain in minus 10 degrees Celsius with nothing but a pair of shorts and boots. Now, let's begin. And so, guys, it's an honor and a privilege to welcome Leo Ryan onto the show. Leo, you're very welcome, sir.
Very, it's great to be here, Mark. Great to be here and great chatting to you again. It's been a little while since we've chatted, so looking forward to this.
Yeah, and to just bake in a little bit of context, I want to just give some context to the guys listening in. You know, my personal experience and connection with you, Leo. A couple of years ago, about 2 years ago, I reached out to Leo. I had for years, you know, on and off, like varying intensities of asthma, but it really had kicked up at that point. I remember I think it was 2020. The first few months, I was really, really getting like a really high dose of that, loss of sleep every single night. I think every single night it was like just 3-4 hours sleep per night. That was pretty much for a number of months. So I finally just bit the bullet, reached out to Leo, and the rest is history through Leo's amazing breathwork coaching and his training program, through Innate Strength, the amazing app, and just a whole coaching approach. I'm so impressed by the comprehensive nature of it, but I nailed it. And coming out the far side of that experience, it wasn't simple. That might come up in the interview. It wasn't simple. It was a really ground zero awakening for me as a man to really get into that level. But with Leo's coaching, I got out the far side, and I'm now enjoying, you know, a level of breathing and breath is life, greater freedom as a man. So yeah, I have that real deep, intimate connection with Leo coming in, and I really wanted to honor Leo's, you know, role in my life. There's just the offset thing, you know, you only see as I see as far as I've seen, because I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, but Leo's one of those men for me. So yeah, I wanted to just honor you at the beginning here, Leo, and just invite the guys in on how potent your presence has been in my life as my breathwork coach.
Beautiful. Thank you, Mark. And I suppose I stand on the shoulders of other men too, and of other people too. So I know exactly how it feels to be in your position too. And at the end of the day, like, is why I call my company Innate Strength, is because really the power is within you. That's what it's all about, and anybody that helps you along the way is just helping you to reveal those aspects of yourself, and helping you to dive deeper and deeper into that until you find your own power and you know how to use it for your best life, for your greatest life.
Yeah, I love you reflecting back just the whole core essence of Innate Strength, and it's really that, it's the same essence here coming from a different slant, you know, married men in the octagon of marriage, but just recognizing that there's that strength and power within. Leo, before I'm really, there's this inner child enthusiasm for me to just jump in at the super cool breath work, your mastery and that gift and message for the guys. But could you go back to, you know, childhood? I know, you know, I think it was early teenage years where asthma kicked up for you. That was like your first initiatory challenge, or when your breathing just wasn't going away, and it was quite a severe time for you health wise before you met the Buteyko method and breathing, et cetera, et cetera. Would you mind just rewinding back to that period, you know, the months or maybe the years leading up to that period, of how asthma was affecting your life as a boy, as a teenager? And yeah, just bring us in on that journey, because it's, I always love, and I know the guys listening in, finding what's the root, you know, the mastery of the man in front of us now, but what's the root story of that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm one of three children. I've got an older brother and a younger sister, and grew up in a middle-class family, you know, a well-off family in that sense. And I developed asthma from about the age of three, is what I'm generally told. And I went through varying bouts of it. I was hospitalized several times. I've had doctors come to me in the middle of the night and administer medication and save my life. And that was one side of the story. And then the other side was I loved sport. I was the middle of the three kids. So, you know, I had a heart as big as a lion, and I would go after everything. And I had an older brother who was a super talented footballer and hurler and sports person. So I looked up to him, but at the same time, I always wanted to beat him at everything. It's the nature of being a brother, right? So, yeah, and I loved all sorts of sports. Main sports was Gaelic football, and then later on judo as well. But what would happen to me throughout my childhood is that I'd be going fine, and then I'd be struck down, for want of a better word, with my asthma. So I'd start to get a wheezing attack, and then that would develop into a chest infection, and then it would develop into getting antibiotics and steroids and been out for a couple of weeks. And then I'd get myself back and I'd be fine for a couple of weeks, and then it would go again. But that kind of culminated when I always forget it around what time it was, about actually 2003, 2004 was my worst year. So it was actually about 19 or 20. Yeah, it was about between the years of 19 and 20 where I spent a total of 6 months in bed sick with asthma, which meant that I was like, when I'm good, I'm good, and I'd be as fit as anybody else and as strong as anybody else and as active as anybody else. But when I'm weak, I'm super, super weak. Like I can't even walk 100 yards. So I would be, again, I'd go to the doctor, get antibiotics, steroids, extra inhalers. It would take me about 2 weeks to recover. Then I'd be back. I'd be building myself up over the next 2 weeks, and then I was struck down again with another bout of it. So 6 months in bed, there was about three inhalers, 14 courses of antibiotics, and over 400 steroid tablets.
Wow, that's
Yeah.
a like knowing now. I know, like you know, Matilda. She does herbal. She's a qualified herbalist, and she has informed me just about the toxic effect of one course of antibiotics. But that level with
Was in one
wow,
year.
wow.
Back then, I there wasn't a hierarchy of antibiotics as there is now. And I knew antibiotics effects more than the doctors. Like the doctors would go, okay, I'm going to give you Augmentin. I'd be like, no, not this time, doc. It's not going to work on me. He'd be like, who is this kid really talking about? I was like, I'm telling you, it's not going to work. And we do it now. There's a power of belief in that too, right? And that really had a massive effect on me, on my mindset, and my mindset going forward in terms of belief in how I could recover, belief in what I could do with my life, and where I could go in my life throughout that year. And it was only years later that I realized just how toxic those beliefs came to. But yeah, like to recover that immune system took me, even after I cured my asthma, which we can talk about a bit, but it took me another 10 years to restore my immune system after all that medication.
And how was it that you came upon breathwork itself? When was that first meeting, first article, first person that introduced you to the idea?
Yeah, pure chance. Absolute pure chance. In that sense, I love serendipity and coincidences. They're amazing. I was So to give you a bit more of a background, because this is I love this podcast because it's a little bit broader than just talking about breath work, and I want to give people more of an idea of just the impact of life in general on the human body, and then how the human body can be a mirror, and particularly the breath can be a mirror for the state of your health and the state of your performance levels as well.
Yeah, please do, and do go there freely, because I know, like, just working with guys, one of the core things that us as men in general can suffer with is like we downregulate like the acknowledgement of any physical symptoms. It's like just up and at it. It's the macho man, just like don't complain. So, yeah, any.
Everybody's out of market. I mean, you know it, being around women, right? Like women are just as bad. In fact, they're worse. They have a menstrual cycle, which is their report card on their health, and they as a society, and there's actually initially there's no blaming it at all, because they're none the wiser, and they've been led that way because of what society has led them down that path. But you know, they've taken medications, and they take the pill, and they take synthetic hormones, which completely destroys their hormonal profile and profile, and absolutely ruins can ruin and very often does ruin their interoception, which is their sense of what is actually going on in their body because they've synthetically changed it, and how they should feel as well. And men do the exact same thing. And the more high stress you're under and the more trauma you have in your life, the less sense of interoception you have. In other words, your brain begins to feel, if something really happens to you, you begin to block and shut that down and block it out, and then you lose that sense of feeling inside. That's known in science, which is wonderful because it brings a bit of awareness to it. But that's what goes on. And the human body as a whole, it's a mirror or a report card for how you're progressing on your life path and the life that you want to lead. And if you find that you have huge physical symptoms of any disease, well, these are your friends, these are your best mates that are actually hugging you and taking an arm around your shoulder and saying, hey, Leo, listen, you're not on the right path here. This is not what I want. This is not what you want for your life. And we need to find a way back on track. And if you don't listen to your body like a best friend, well, then eventually it starts to nag at you and nag at you and then shout at you and then scream at you. And there's a saying in therapy circles, which is a bit, the body whispers before it screams, right?
Yeah.
So if you're in deep disease, then your body's screaming. Absolutely, yeah. Screaming. And that's what happened. Mine is, to give context to where I was. So I finish up school, sat the leave insert, did a decent leave insert, but that wasn't my focus. I actually wanted to go into the Army cadets and be a cadet in the Army. Passed 7 of their exams and got to their medical exam, thinking that maybe asthma might screw me up, but actually it turned out I was colorblind. Which completely came from left field because, wasn't expecting that at all. And there's nothing you could do about it. Like it just is what it is. I can see colors, but just when they're really close together, I find it difficult. And sometimes it takes my sight, sometimes days, to kind of notice the difference, let's say, between even navies. They say it's red, green, but navy and black is hard for me to distinguish at a distance, or dark purple and a dark navy can be difficult too.
Okay.
But so I remember sitting outside that I went in on my own. And did the test. And I remember sitting outside. They said, no, look, you're colorblind. They test me a second time because even they weren't sure. And said, look, you're colorblind. That's it. End of the road. This path isn't for you. And I remember sitting outside the Army barracks, like bawling my eyes out. Mm-hmm. Absolutely bawling my eyes out because I was like, what am I going to do now? Ended up in computer science because that's what the Leave Insert gave me in my points to go into university. Out of all my course choices that I had picked, that's what I ended up with. And really hated it. So I spent 2 years in a university course that I absolutely hated, in terms of the practicality of it, like sitting 10 hours, 12 hours, 14 hours in front of a computer, commuting on top of that, just is not me at all. So here I was, 19 or 20 years of age, studying in university for a career I did not want, living a life I did not want, also losing faith that I would ever achieve my physical goals, which is I wanted to play Gaelic football for Dublin. And I was really small. I was like, I'm 5'8", but I was a 9 to 9.5 stone. And I played senior level at club at that stage, and had a lot of attributes going, but knew I was weak, physically weak. Knew that I was liable for my immune system to crash every time. Was part of a freshers team that we got to an All-Ireland semi and played with, you know, some of the best known inter-county players of the last 10 years and played against others and held my own in it. But then come the second year when I'm playing cigarettes and football, I'm sick every other 2 weeks. I was just at a complete loss. For want of a better word. And it was funny because I turned 40 only last month. We're now in October. So only last month I turned 40. And at that stage, I never actually thought that I'd see 40. I had thoughts in my mind that I'd never see 40 years of age.
Right.
Because I just didn't, you know, wasn't, when you're not living a life that you want, those thoughts creep in and become pretty strong. And I'd never say that I had depression or suicidal thoughts or any, like I've, I've known people who are really deep and have had those experiences. I haven't. But at the same time, when those thoughts start flickering through your mind, as I think they do a lot of guys, it kind of makes you wonder about life.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, because I know myself, I early mid-20s, more 24, 25, early days in marriage, and there was a period there for several months, and it was just like it was a tsunami of those thoughts, to the point of which it was actually my escape to go there. It was like, okay, this life, like, how the hell did I just come to be living in this situation that I felt at the time? I couldn't change anything. There was no sense of, of autonomy, of control. And yeah, well, obviously coming out the far side of that, but when I learned to just start speaking to it, it's amazing how many men can resonate. Guys listening in, there's a high percentage that at some time in their life, or multiple times in their life, could be even now, those thoughts are there. So it opens up a really essential conversation.
Mark, I actually think it's a part of life too. Genuinely, like, life isn't all rosy. I don't know anybody who's gone through a life that it's been all rosy, and that their life path has been all rosy. Everybody meets challenges along the way. Some of it is physical health, some of it's mental health, some of it is relationships, some of it's financial, and it's other areas of life. But I certainly, I have a strong feeling that everybody, at least those thoughts cross their mind when life is tough, because it's the easy way out, and the brain always looks for the easiest way out, and sometimes the easiest way out is that way. That's just the reality of it. That is what it is. It's not. So I don't think there's, for me, there's no shame in any of those thoughts, and there's no judgment, there's no attachment to any of them. I'm just like, everybody goes, and probably that's to my detriment, because I'm like I'm nonchalant about as well. I don't make a big deal of this stuff, because I'm like, yeah, now how do I find a way through? And there's a part of me that's always like, now how do I find a way through? That is just, and maybe that's lucky, and that's the part that's lucky for me, is that's my disposition, is that middle child, is that small kid, is that skinny guy that was always sick when he was a kid, is how do I get through this? I kind of have that, which, like, it reflected in my football. You could see it in the way I played sport, but it's reflected in life too, is how do I find a way through?
Beautiful. And that disposition, nature, nurture, of just how do I find a way through? You spoke earlier on in the conversation, Leo, about certain, I don't know exactly how you termed it, but like negative mindsets, belief systems that over the years, I think it was over that 10-year period where you were rebuilding your immune system, that over time you came to realize just so how much that sort of a mindset or specific beliefs were working against you.
Yeah, exactly. Those beliefs do, and your identity does, which is the highest level. Like, it's funny, like, I would think, and I haven't discussed it with them, but my parents would have thought, like, that's Leo the sick kid. He needs a lot of help, a lot of support, and one day he'll be there for us. I think they had, I just, that's a personal thing that I think they had that mindset, and I probably had that too. Like, there's Leo. Like, God love him. And so I'll give you an example. For example, even something as simple as cooking. Like, I never cooked as a teenage kid at all. My older brother did a lot of cooking and liked it. My younger sister did home ec in school and liked cooking, and I was just in it. I'd happily eat cornflakes, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and get by like that. I was just like, I didn't care less about that stuff. But again, that feeds into the overall autonomy of a person. And autonomy is what you're seeking through your teenage years and into your early 20s, and how to stand on your own two feet, and then how to work interdependently with other people. So I definitely think that being sick that often, that young, at that stage when I hadn't stepped into my own power, that, yeah, absolutely, it affected it affected right the way up to my identity, my value system, my belief system, everything, and right the way down. And then it just manifested in my habits and in my daily practice in life, in who I was.
I'm curious, Was it a very slow, imperceptible, step-by-step process overcoming that, or in those early years, were there any abrupt moments or experiences, that sort of initiated you to sort of waking up, get that spark of life to transform?
No, I mean my transformation came around when I mean the first step of it came around when I was in the doctor's in the GP's office. This is, as it says, in around that age, 19 or 20, and he said to me, I knew I wasn't going to stay in, or I didn't want to stay in computers, and I was looking at changing from there, and I was like, oh, look, I'm not going to become a fitness instructor. What do you think? And he was like, no chance. He says, Leo, we could wrap you up in bubble wrap and put you away till you're 25 years of age, but there's no, like, we don't know if you're ever going to get rid of this like that. No, this is a management thing, Leo. He says, you're on all them, you're on three inhalers. I was on tablets as well. I was on all that other medication. And he was like, we don't know if you'll get better. He says, look, the only thing I could do is get you an appointment for a respiratory consultant in Beaumont Hospital in Dublin, one of the best in the country. And that's all we can do is wait and hope. And in my mind, there was something cracked, which it was like, fuck you. There was
Yes.
something in there. No, I never said it out loud, but something inside me was like, and fuck life and all of this. Like, this is bullshit. And that's where I meant those thoughts kind of creep in, because essentially I went home and nothing changed. I was on more antibiotics, more steroids, more inhalers. Nothing changed for a couple of weeks, and then a couple of weeks later, my mom rang me up one day and said, "Oh, Leo, there's this breathing course that's come to Ireland. It's called the Buteyko method." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I might have heard. Tell me about it. What is it?" And she goes, "Look, it's there's a bit of research behind it. It's supposed to be really good with asthma." I heard this guy. I think she heard it on the radio, yeah, or she read it in a newspaper. And she's like, "Look, they have a course starting next week. Do you want to go on it?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm on it. Let's go." And she booked me in fairness to her. My dad took me there. The course was run over a morning time for 3 Mondays in a row, and that was it. And it was Patrick McKeown had gone to Russia, learned the technique, learned the method from Dr. Buteyko himself, brought it back to Ireland, set up in maybe late 2002, early 2003. And this was, I think it was 2004 by this stage. And I got on the course the final week. He taught me the techniques, taught me the science behind the techniques, and how often I needed to train and what I needed to do. And I just implemented. And I trained 2 to 3 times a day every day, for at least a year. There's a measurement score in the Buteyko method. So I could see my progress. I could see the measurement score progressing. I could feel what was going on in my body. And by the time I got to the respiratory consultant, which was a year later, I had a diary full of results for breathing and lifestyle changes. And I approached him, and he was like, oh, Leo, lovely to see you. What can I do for you? And I was like, look, things have changed. I was like, I feel great. I've been doing this. And he knew Patrick McKeown. He knew the method. And he says, look, obviously, by the end of the meeting, he said, look, obviously, you know what you're doing. You can look after yourself. He says, so what do you want from me? And I said, I want your permission, and I want your to know that I can come off medication safely. And he says, yeah. He says, fine. He says, just know that, you might have relapses, but you know what to do. Don't be stupid, and keep the medication there if ever you need it. And but yeah, by all means, start to wean yourself off gradually and show me how to do it. Which was funny, that one comment, because I kept an inhaler for the next 11 years in the house. That's how long it took me to let go of my childhood, really. So when you asked me, was there one moment, that was the big turning year over the process of that year. But like, there was loads and loads of moments beyond that. What really solidified in my life, it hasn't been a satori or an instant awakening, for me in any one moment. It's been a training effect. It's been seeing that the long-term impact of continual improvement spiral through my life, to lead to great big moments. And don't get me wrong, there's been some really significant moments that have changed my life, but even in breathwork sessions where people have amazing experiences and they're like, oh, or they've done plant medicine, and they're like, whoa, this is incredible. And that they do find a new identity and create a new identity kind of from those experiences. It's not until you embed it in the habits of everyday life that you really solidify and become that which you think you are, or become that person that you know is inside you. I believe anyway.
Yeah, I love that link with the habits. I know in Atomic Habits by James Clear, he talks about the root of the word identity. I think it's identitas, coming from Greek, and it's repeated beingness. So
Oh, wow.
identity, it's just by repeatedly showing up in a certain way. You know, if I start playing the guitar today, if I repeatedly do that without questioning, it's like right now, do I self-identify as a guitar player? No, but if I just keep doing it and keep showing up by repeatedly playing the guitar, at someday I'll spontaneously in a conversation go, "Oh yeah, I'm a guitar player. Here, can I jam with you guys?" The identity will be there, and it's I love your embodiment of it and the point you're making, and like the encouragement in with guys. It's like, you know, maybe guys listening in, they mightn't associate with the diagnosis of asthma or the experience of that. It might be a different health condition. It could be a mental health condition. And it mightn't be any so-called health issue. It could be a whole life health issue. You know, the podcast is very much on, you know, showing up as a husband. It might be, you know, I know my thing as an I didn't self-identify as a very good husband. Actually, deep down, I thought it was crap. I thought it was like deficient. I had a very low identity. But like what you're saying, it's just a compound effect of learning new strategies, new ways of showing up as a husband, and bit by bit, day by day, over the last number of years, I'm like, yeah, it's like, when did it happen? Was there one moment? No, it's the compound effect over a long period of time where I can self-identify now. It's like, I'm a pretty awesome husband. Are there challenges? Yeah, but I'm now feeling way more confident. And I just want guys listening in to tap into that, to make sure that it's like not alienating that, oh, you know, the asthma of, you know, journey of Leo does not doesn't transfer to me. It's like just to use that wisdom for whatever, you know, the guy's limits of identity might be.
Absolutely. Asthma is one of my pathways to who I am today, is one of the parts of my pathway. You could apply it to building muscle, to losing fat, to becoming a sports performer, to achieving in work, to being just an unbelievable family person and husband, to being just a great person in general, having great energy, following your passions, having an identity and a purpose in life that you just are in love with. And if that's your pathway to it, that's great. You will, but if you step back from somebody's life, it's to zoom out and to see the principles behind, and then the interconnectedness behind it all is where the real beauty of it is. And I see it just so happens that breathing is my pathway, and it also so happens that A, it's linked to fear, which is interesting to me, and B, it is the most fundamental physical part of you, of a human being, is the breath. Without it, you're dead if you're not breathing. So for me to have practiced it specifically and trained in it and familiarized myself with it meant that I'm training the linch part of my physical body, the very essence of what it means to be a physical human being. And then as you zoom out, you can see how that interlinks with every physical process and mental process, and then into you as a spiritual being and into a person as well. So you can see how it all just connects in together. And that's really, I find when anybody goes on that journey of restoring their breathing and building it, that very often just they find when they simplify everything down to that and then build it back out, that they can make those connections.
Yeah. Could you speak to it, Leo? Because I know I love you baking in that context there, that it's beyond the relevance of just asthma. Could you speak to, you know, from a more peak performance perspective, you know, guys listening in where, yeah, they don't have a respiratory issue or it's minimal, it's never been really an issue in their lives. But, you know, the guys listening in general are quite ambitious. They're quite, hungry to find what the next level of performance, their capacity to show up open-heartedly. You spoke to it like with purpose, with passion, with higher energy in life, in their roles in marriage and parenting and mission, etc. Could you speak to or expand upon what you've already alluded to? What are the benefits, direct benefits of breathwork, and why, if guys were sort of hanging on the sidelines, maybe a lot of guys have heard about breathwork. How could you encourage them and invite them into the breathwork? What's there for them to gain as men?
Everything. there's so many different routes that you could travel down at this. Talking about it from a physical point of view, you can say, look, it will help you to sleep better, which will help you to restore better, which will then help you to think better and to create better. And then to perform better. The issue isn't, or the thing isn't that breathwork is amazing for performance. I reckon that's probably about 5 to 10% of it. But the thing is that as a human society, we are weaker than we have ever been. And that is what's fascinating. That's why breathing is so important, is because if your breathing is affected in any way from life, then everything is impacted, especially your ability to perform. That when I say ability to perform, I mean your ability to focus your attention upon something, hold your concentration on that, and be able to immerse yourself in that moment, which is known as flow, or getting into the flow states. And then being able to recover, restore, and learn from that whole process and repeat it time and time again. That's what performance is in any domain. And whether you're an elite guitar player or a husband or sports person or singer, or it really doesn't matter. It's focusing your attention on that task at hand, holding that attention, being able to learn in that environment and the challenges of those environments. And then to step back and be able to recover and embed that learning and do it better the next time. But the reason why breathing is so powerful is because as a society, and they say that up to 90, depending on the research study, some studies would suggest up to 95% of people have breathing dysfunctions. So let me just step out. I'm not talking about diseases like asthma. That's not what I mean. But I'm talking about adapted breathing patterns to life. So let me throw some other stats maybe at you, is we spend 93% of our time indoors. Think of it. We live in houses, people work in offices, they drive cars very often, and they are always indoors. When they go outdoors, they're dressed up to the nines in clothes and in warmth and in hats and in scarves and in gloves and in boots and in ski pants and in the whole works to keep them warm, right? But there was a time when the first settlers in America moved across in the Mayfair to land just north of Boston, a place called Plymouth, a couple of hundred years ago. And they came across to settle in the new land. And they were dying because of starvation, because of the cold, and because of the travel that they'd been under. And they couldn't farm the new land, and they couldn't do anything because it was up to minus 40 degrees centigrade in that area of the world at that time, right?
Wow.
And out of the woods comes a Native American dressed in a loincloth,
Yeah.
right? Dressed in a loincloth. So humans, only a couple of hundred years ago, could withstand below freezing temperatures dressed in a loincloth and nothing else and survive a winter. How do you get from there to, like, for me as a kid, I had to wear a balaclava, a jacket, two jumpers, t-shirt, and all the rest to keep me warm. My mom wouldn't let me outside without multiple layers on me.
Yeah.
And then I trained with Wim Hof, and a couple of years later, I'm there climbing a mountain at minus 10 degrees centigrade, in a pair of shorts and boots for 6 hours. Like, as a human species, we are weaker than we've ever, we're high performers in one area, one specific area, because we've got so specialized. But that's not what a human being is. There's a multifaceted area to being a human being, and a modern one. Yes, there's physical strength, like lifting heavy stuff. Yes, there's endurance, like running, and flexibility, like yoga. Yes, there's good nutrition, right? That's gone down the toilet. There is being in good relationships and been able to have dealt with your trauma. Most of the built-in or innate human structures for dealing trauma and high stress have gone in the last 40 years. Like, as bad as they might have been in some cases, the church has disintegrated in most of the Western world, which is the idea of connecting to spirit. Don't get me wrong, there's lots of other ways, but I'm just saying the main construct. Communities as a whole have been eroded. I only listened to the other day, and it was amazing. They were talking about the areas in Ireland where the areas, it was on the radio, and I don't listen to radio much, but every so often you catch a conversation, you go, oh, I want to hear this. And it was the former head guard, I don't know what they're called, of Mountjoy. And he said, you know, the highest, the areas where most people that go to prison come from are urban areas throughout the world. He was like, so you'd expect people from Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Galway to have high rates of crime and high prison rates from those areas. Why? Why is it that those areas are so high in crime? Is it just socioeconomic, or is it that they also don't have good supports and structures? Is it because they don't have nature around them? Is it because they're not a part of the planet Earth and they're not doing stuff that's just built for you to be a human? Like, sorry, but getting cold is part of being Irish and part of being human. But embracing that. And then it gets so bad that your breathing is impacted. And breathing, you know, adapted breathing will lead to poor quality of sleep. And once that happens, whew, you're on a road, a very deep and dark road, to everything from increased rates of and risk of cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, ADHD, and inability to focus and concentrate, higher rates of cancers, across the board. It is
It's properly,
unbelievable.
it's properly astounding, you know, and it's one variable. When you think from just the masculine perspective, we like to problem solve. It's like, oh, give me a problem, I'll find a solution. And as you said, it's like it's one variable, it's your breath. And from consciously training in one variable by whatever technique you choose to go or multiple techniques, it just impacts everything, as you're
It
saying.
has a compound effect on everything. Compound effect on everything, yeah.
And within the specific tech context of the podcast, and you know, it's the point is to have a holistic view. It's not just about being a husband, because being a husband, you can't be a husband unless you have the whole support of your physiology, psychology, you know, the energy, et
Can't be a
cetera.
good husband without being a good person.
No,
And it can't be a good person if you're in pain all day, or you can't focus, or you can't do what you love to do because you don't know what it is.
So within that context, what I'm hearing you like with the in those high percentages of just, you know, the breeding patterns of men being adapted, men and women, but speaking of men here, you know, what I found in when I started doing the training with you, Leo, and coming out the far side, you know, coming out the far side, I just started realizing it's like, wow, how bloody irritable I was around Matilda, how irritable I was around the girls. And it was actually, there was a lot of grief to come from that because it had happened so insidiously just over the years, imperceptibly. Yeah, there at the end, it's sort of like for a few different things in life, streams of consequences of events coming in. I think psychosomatically, it really flared up. But for so many years, you know, my best intentions as a man, I wanted to be present. I wanted to be there and understanding and to be, you know, able to listen to Matilda, listen to my girls, you know, be a good dad, be a good husband. But without realizing it, you know, that interoception, I hadn't realized that the baseline of my nervous system through my, that maladapted breathing pattern, good intentions were never going to bring me. And I sort of bring this into to guys listening in, a lot, most guys, nearly every single guy I speak to, in my work and men's groups, how do you show up? Like, is there conflict in your relationship? A lot of guys just burst out laughing. It's like, is there conflict, man? You're like, arguments with their wife and tension, and she's looking for presence. And I just wanted to speak to that, like, awareness myself personally, but with other guys is, until you actually have breath work and have some way to self-regulate your nervous system, there's almost going to be a default irritability. Do I speak correctly if I say that, or just
No, absolutely. If you are on edge, if you are, you can be hyper aroused. And I'm not talking about just the sexual arousal. I'm talking about energy arousal, right? Which means sympathetic in terms of nervous system. It means active, go, 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 go. If you're that type of way, that will be reflected in your breathing pattern. Okay, and it will also mean that you'll have an inability to focus on things for a long time, and you'll be very often task switching, and that your concentration levels will be poor. You can also be the opposite of the end of the spectrum, which you can be more depressed. And I'm not talking about major depression, although that's one form of it, but depressed means highly parasympathetically adapted, or you just present a life that you've no goals, and you've no desire to do anything, and you just want to sit on the couch all day and numb your pain with Coke or crisps or chocolate or alcohol or TV. And there's that side of it, and that's also reflected in your breath. And you can even hear it in my voice, which is my breath, right? And so, like, I didn't realize for years afterwards, I found it really hard in the computer science course. I was one of those guys who was a really hard worker, and I noticed in the course that there was people who just got computers and had a brain for it and just didn't even have to study, didn't even have to blink. It was like reading a book for them. It was easy. Then there was people in the middle who worked really hard, and of that group, there was worked really hard and got it and worked really hard, and they had no hope in ever doing anything more than surviving at the very best. Most of them fail. For example, in day one of the course, we were told by a lecturer, hey, a lecturer of 300 people, introduce your person to the left, introduce yourself to the person on the right, have a chat for the next 5 minutes. And then at the end of it, he goes, now, if the person on your left is here next year, then you or the person on your right won't be here because there's a third of a dropout rate in first year. And then if it's you and the person on the right left here, then by the end of second year, if you're still here, that person will be gone. Because by the end of second year, there's a two-thirds dropout rate. And I was like, wow. I was like, well, that won't be me. So I survived first year, right? But literally got an average of 40%, survived it, right? Got to Christmas in the second year and failed four exams and thought, okay, I can try and compensate. So I'm really put my head down. And I made a deal with myself at that stage. I said, look, if I sit the exams in summer and I pass my exams, I'll come back and sit my Christmas exams and repeat. And I might even compensate, and that'll be a bonus. So I was away in a in on a J1 visa to San Francisco, and I got my results in the summer, and I failed another four. And I was like, fuck this, I'm not going back there. There is no hope in hell. Because I knew my brain just didn't understand the logic of computers and how it worked. It just, like, no matter how, and I worked hard, like I was a hard worker, but just didn't have the brain power for it. But several years later, like, I was writing a thesis for sports management. I went on and did a degree in sports management and then a master's as well. And I was writing a thesis, and something clicked. And by this stage, I'd done all the breath training and had restored my health and was feeling really good. And all of a sudden, I was looking at the thesis design and how to write a thesis, and I could see the logical flow pattern of computer language. And I was like, this is just like computers, but I get it. And I was like, oh, this is nuts. This is crazy. And it wasn't until, and I mean, years later, when I started to connect the dots, that breathing actually has a huge role to play, yes, on fear in the brain, but also on attention. So back in 2017, there was this research paper that came out, which showed that Attention and your ability to place your attention, focus on something, is directly connected to your breathing, to how you breathe. And they showed the part of the brain where it's connected, a place called the locus coeruleus. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And I got this guy, this research from a guy over in the States, and I was reading through the paper and I was loving it because I was loving breathing. And then I looked at who wrote it, and it was a guy called Mike Melnichuk. And the college that I came out of was Trinity College Dublin. And I was like, no, I was like, I got to talk to this guy. So I emailed him. I found his email, his contact, went down to Mike, and he was really interested in me because of all the different breathing patterns I'd studied. And I was mad about his research. So I went into the labs in Trinity, put on the EEG helmet, and we started to do tests and stuff on me. And I saw firsthand how certain breathing patterns elicit different states of the brain and different brainwave functions. And also how, if you're tested without even thinking of your breathing, how it is changed and adapted by the challenge, by the mental challenge of a tough task. So breathing and attention are tied together in a bi-directional way. So one affects the other and the other affects the one. And that if you then become aware of your breathing, you then have the power to change your breathing patterns to affect your states of attention and vice versa. This is why meditation works on the one hand, and it impacts the physiology, but then your physiology works and it can impact meditation. So the way I looked at it was I had raised my baselines over many years with breathing. And when I raised the baselines of health and of performance in terms of my brain performance and my body's performance, once I raised those baselines, there was no going back. I didn't have to try any harder. I didn't have to bring any other skills in. I could just see patterns that I could never see before.
And what immediately comes there, I could see patterns that I could never see before. So it's like there's a broadening of your receptivity and your capacity to tap into those said, I suppose it's the root of intuition. It's just this beautiful seeing the patterns. And the potency of showing up in marriage, like there, because what's that? It's like the unpredictability. Maybe sometimes with the feminine, you know, the feminine shitstorm is like, there are no patterns, but maybe that's a pattern in itself. It's like, ah, there are no patterns. Can I just self-regulate? Can I just drop into my breathing pattern? Can I hold space for, you know, the unpredictable, irrational feminine to just have to do what, you know, women need to do at times, is just go there, you know, just go with the waves of that. But that power to self-regulate through breath allows you hold that space without going into closure, going into fear. I suppose it's that flow zone. You're able to focus on the topic. The topic is your woman, or it can be your kids, of course, you know, like a family man. It can be a kid going through experience of bullying when you want to jump in. There's a part of you is like, if you get flustered, you want to jump in as a man and fix the situation. But if you can self-regulate the breathing and just be there, very often they'll find the solution themselves. But there again, it's without that foundation of breath work, of self-regulation of the nervous system, it's a real uphill challenge for guys.
To make that connection, so I'm at the end of writing a book actually on breath training. It's in editing phase at the minute. And what I wanted to do is piece together how it's not only about, you know, there's loads of books out there about breathing and breathing techniques and methods. This is about understanding how breathing affects you and you affect breathing, but also the coaching aspect and guiding you into that awareness of how it works in your body. Okay. And I remember a couple of years ago that I was thinking about that problem of how do I explain, or how does breathing really impact a person? And I actually related across my eldest daughter. Now, my eldest daughter she has dyslexic tendencies and she misses some social cues, right? That's part of her personality. So, for example, when she was very young and she was learning, so when she was like 5 or 6 and doing her spellings, she would, let's say commitment, and it would be like C-O-M-T-I-M-N-E-M-N-T. Like she'd get all the letters, but they're all jumbled up. And that was the way her brain works. And I would do what my parents would do, which is repeat, 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 repeat. And that kind of hard, just do it, repeat until you eventually get it. And then inevitably what would happen is that our two personalities would collide and we'd explode and just have a big roar match. It was really good parenting, honestly.
I've been there. It's been both sides. When you can say it and laugh, you know you're coming out the far side. So bring us out the far side of what you've learned along the way.
So that's what I call the conditioned reaction, right? Which is you are my reaction to her was just what I had been taught and what I had learned in life, and it was just go do, and everything explodes, right? And that's very common. And then I watched how her mom would parent her, and she'd go over and she'd give her a hug and she'd be real gentle with her, and she would eventually settle herself down and then spell the spelling. Right. So both times she ended up spelling the spelling, just my way was like pure chaos. And then it settled down. And then her mom's way was gentility. It was kindness. It was compassion. It was that's what she gave to her, which helped her to regulate her nervous system. And then she was able to spell. And I was in awe of that. And I tried that way, but it doesn't really work. When it's not you, it's not you, right? I'm a coach by trade. I'm a little bit harder. I'm a man. I'm a little bit different in that way. And I was thinking, I tried that way and it worked somewhat and it worked quite well for me, but it didn't work great for me. And I was like, I couldn't figure out a way how to help her. And one day we were shopping and she flipped out and had one of her stops, and my reaction would have been to go hard at her. As I said, that was my conditioned reaction, but I just let her. I just said, yeah, I don't care if everybody's looking at us, just let her go. And so she went crazy and she was taking stuff off the shelf and stamping and crying and doing her thing, and I just let her do her thing. And then eventually she just automatically calmed down, and then she came to me and we hugged it out. And then we carried on with our way. And I went, whoa, that's real. I realized this, right? And I went, this is really powerful. So then I applied that across to her spellings when it would go nuts and she wasn't spelling it. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to let her have her strop. And I didn't push it, but I just let her go through that phase. And then she calmed down automatically and we'd hug it out and we would have that compassion there. And then she would find her way. And that's how I kind of parented her. That's how I learned how to parent her through that and help her with her spellings. But I was thinking about this with breathing. And I was like, I know breathing as a physical habit, as a practice, has the most powerful immediate impact on your nervous system. So, for example, like 10, 15 breaths through the mouth, really powerful, will automatically send you into fight or flight, will automatically get you energized and aroused and go, 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 go. And vice versa, calm breath. That's silent and supple and all nasal and completely relaxed. We'll do the opposite. So I was trying to explain how this reacts in the body. And I realized that it works the exact same way as Beatrice, as my eldest kid, which was, you have the conditioned reaction to any stressor, right? Which is usually like something bad happens or something challenging happens, and you have your reaction like me, which is, in my case, it was freak out. Some other people just shy away. But physically, it was, or it's holding your breath until you explode. And that's your conditioned reaction. So there's two ways of improving that. One is you can lean into that and consciously hyperventilate, or I call it supraventilate, breathe more. And there's millions of techniques that can lead you into that. And eventually what will happen is that your breath will then, you'll consciously calm your breath and your breath will relax down and you'll rebalance yourself and your nervous system. Or you could do directly into the other side and lean into the other side and do some breath holding techniques or some really calm meditative breathing techniques. And that too would take you more directly into a what I call a strong natural center. In other words, a place where you can be open-minded, where you can be solution-oriented, and where you can see with a greater perspective of how life is happening, and you can just sit there and have non-reaction to be it your wife who is looking just to rant and rave, possibly, and you're looking for a solution. You can just sit there in it, or your kid that is having trouble with something or is going off on one, you can sit there and take it and just relax and wait for the storm to pass. Or it can be applied across a performance in any other domain.
I love both of those examples. And like coming from a men's work perspective, you know, and I speak to it quite often. So just to sort of tie it all in a golden thread throughout different episodes. But, you know, when I hear you with your daughter navigating that so consciously, you know, the masculine perspective or the masculine role in deep intimate relationships, you know, both marriage and parenting, they're intimate relationships. The masculine role as a man is to hold the structure, is to create a safe container wherein the feminine can do what the feminine needs to do. If it's mad, incredible bliss, because sometimes actually it like it's the most challenging parts for a man is with both kids and our wives is when they go totally blissed out, when they're totally euphoric, they're in party mode, and we're there like, no, I'm just like, I like to keep control in this. It can be too hot to handle. But then there's the other side. So it's that masculine container. So I really tapped in, and obviously your daughter really dropped in within that container and could self-regulate. So for guys listening in, Leo, you know, I know myself when I came to breathwork first, it's like yeah, I went on YouTube and Google it, and it's like there's, well, I was about to say 17 million different types, but
Yeah.
there's a ton of information out there, and it can become very overwhelming. What are some of the simplest breathwork techniques that guys that have a curiosity, you've piqued their curiosity here, they're like, yeah, okay, I get the rationale behind it. Okay, I need to just, you know, it's train or just play around with my nervous system through the medium of breathwork. But what are some of the foundational breathwork techniques that are most available to guys to take the first few powerful steps in their breathwork journey?
Well, if they're listening to this, I would say raise your baselines, go train it. Which is like that. That's how I look at breathing. Is there's two sides. There's three parts of breathing. One is breath work, which everybody calls breathing breath work nowadays. For me, breath work is an experience. So you're going for anywhere between 20 minutes to an hour. Usually, it's bigger, faster breathing of some sort. And you're really getting really fight or flight, really sympathetic, really aroused, really energized from the experience, which will then allow you to drop into relaxation and see things more clearly. But that's an experience. It's not a developmental process. It can be very profound, without a doubt, much like falling in love. Like it's a profound experience in the beginning, which is wonderful, but then you need to do the work to actually to fall into deeper states of love with that person, and to create a deeper connection, which is in the long run more meaningful than just that blissed out honeymoon phase, right? And that's some people are pulled into that style of breath work, and I'm like, if you're pulled into that style, go for it. Go for it gently, I'd say. Because it can create very strong emotional experiences in you. And go to a qualified person, I would say, in the beginning, because it's just safer. It's just easier to do it that way. But for me, the others, and then you have breathing techniques, which is you do for like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. And it helps you just to auto-regulate yourself temporarily. So, for example, the Navy SEALs are very famous for using a method called box breathing, where it's like breathe in for four, hold your breath for four, breathe out for four, and hold your breath. So the shape of your breath is like a box. And they do that for 2 minutes. Or there's another one called 4-6 breathing, which is breathe in for four and out for six, again for 2 minutes. And that just helps to calm your system down in the minute. But again, it doesn't have, well, it doesn't have the profound experience on one side, and it doesn't have the developmental aspect on the other side. But it's you playing around and experiencing, and it will lead you to other places, which is great, and give you a snapshot or an easy way into breathing. But for me, it's training. Like, that's my background is in sport and as a trainer and as a coach. So breath training is where it's at, where I'm like, okay, this is a program designed to develop your breathing system, and that is your breathing mechanics and your muscles and how you breathe, developing your physiology to enhance your breath or your oxygen and carbon dioxide levels to improve it, and then your psychophysiology or how your brain relates to your breathing as well. And that's a developmental process that happens over weeks and months and possibly even years. But usually it takes somebody about 12 to 16 weeks, possibly up to 6 months. So that's anywhere between 3 and 6 months to develop their baselines effectively. And that's what I do as part of most of my work nowadays, is it's in coaching the breath and being a breath coach for breath training or developing your breathing.
It can be such a new concept, you know, training and breathing. Because I know even, you know, working as a coach for men, it's like for so many years, maybe in the States, there's been more of a, you know, a cultural acceptance of, you know, everybody has a therapist or a coach. But this idea of, you know, training in the gym is one thing, but training the breath, yet it's so foundational and so potent.
Well, I actually, in my experience, I came up with that term breath training because I'm a personal trainer and a coach, and I merged those two together because it's like, this is actually what I'm doing here with it. Now I've come across a term been used before, but it's funny, I'm a master instructor in the Oxygen Advantage method, which means I can teach people in the Oxygen Advantage, and I'm starting that up next year more so. But we had a big gathering there back in August of this year, and we're talking about all what we use for term, and they use breath work, and they use it. And I'm like, for this method, for the Buteyko, it's breath training. That is what you're doing. You are purposely taking time out of your day in a structured way to develop your breathing. And there is a goal to it. There is a state you want to get to. And then once the training is done, it's done. You don't have to continue it for life. Like, I don't do breath training every day, all day. But there are times in the year when, much like if you injure your knee because you play sport the whole time, then you have to go back and rehab that knee. But once it's rehabbed, you just go back to sport. So the analogy there is once you rehab your breath, once you restore your breathing, then you get on with your life and you enjoy it. And your life should support a functional and optimal breath. Your baseline should be nice and high. You shouldn't have to think about it. Sure, you might use it then for performance layered on top, but you don't have to restore it again until something happens. I don't know, maybe you damage a rib, or maybe a virus comes along which knocks you for six, or maybe something emotional happens in your life, like the loss of a loved one might happen, and that can impact your breathing, and then you start again and you begin to retrain your breath and restore it again. And again, once you get your baselines back up to scratch, away you go.
I'm what I'm feeling there coming through is like once you start the baseline awareness that it all starts with that awareness of from within. Because I know like for years I wasn't aware of any inner emotions. I wasn't aware of my body. I wasn't feeling. I look back now and I'm like, man, your breathing was shit for years. But it's like it just crept in as the norm. It just crept in, like, you know, emotional numbness crept in as the norm. So I suppose what I'm hearing there is like you waken it with the training for a period, you know, but then that new awareness, it's just to keep that new awareness. There was one key thing that I remember you saying to me at the beginning of my training journey with you, which was, Mark, I'm going to paraphrase, but it's something along the lines of, Mark, a lot of people forget sort of how bad it was here. So it's like the risk of when you start getting better, just don't forget, you know, don't forget how good it has come. And I've went back to that time and time and time again, because I found a cycle myself where doing the training, I got to my 40 in the morning score. For guys listening in, it's like a key marker. It's sort of like the pattern of asthma. I'm going beyond, and I got to that point feeling brilliant. The discipline and the training went, and had great intentions, and just a slow, imperceptible slide back. And then it's like, oh, boom! Hold on, I have to reset the system. And
Yeah, you really do forget how bad things were. Like it's amazing how the human brain can, just the same way as in trauma, like somebody can experience, sexual assault, can experience a really nasty childhood, and they won't even remember it ever happening in some cases. It's just a complete didn't even happen. And then you go into, I know, something happens to you later on in life, and all of a sudden those memories just flood. Like they're just locked away, but they just come flooding back, and like, whoa, okay, I'm beginning to remember all of this. It's the same with subtle things, but when they're subtle, they're just so imperceptible and so insidious. They're little boogers. But you forget how bad things really were.
Yeah, I know with my work coaching, like high achieving men to be the husband she brags about, you know, there's guys that can perform to an astounding level in mission and work. And yet, what I would say is like the Brett has become definitely since my work with you. I think I played around with it before. I knew it was important intellectually, but just that embodied wisdom or just that know-how, it's front and center. Every single one of my guys coming in, there's Brett work there. It's like box breathing or the 4-6, the heart coherence breathing. It's, you know, there's simple videos. It's simple. It's quantifiable. Just a few minutes per day, and to be that still awareness, yeah. And it spreads out into everything. And the impact that has in relationship is phenomenal. Just that mirror neuron, when you can drop in there, your woman feels safe. I just bring that, you know, that feminine safety. It's the one thing. You know, we beat ourselves up as men, and we try to overcomplicate our women. And it's like, oh man, I'm trying to meet 100 needs. There's like one core need for her to feel safe in your presence, which is like she can say, she can be within reason, you know, whatever she needs to express. And can you sit there, like you said with your daughter? Can you just sit there? Can you be comfortable with the discomfort? Can you just be fine with that? It's so core.
And I suppose to give something tangible to your listeners as well as slow. Remember, I said breathing is connected to attention, concentration. So particularly slow breathing, slow nasal breathing in and out of the nose. But that's what most of those, like if you think of a box for, as I said, like the 4 second box breath, that's a 16 second breath. Four in, four hold, four out, four hold. 16 into 60 is what? Four times? Is it? Three times? That's what you're going to get, right? So now you've lowered your breath count, your breath rate to 3 breaths per minute. The average breath rate is 12 to 15 breaths per minute in normal daily life. Somebody who has a disease, it can be up to 25 and 30. In fact, in hospital, if you have a higher breath rate than 25, you are likely to have a heart attack. Which is interesting. Taking it from anything lower than 12 to 15 will help connect your breath to your heart and your breath and heart to your brain. And it will synchronize those three organs and it will align those three organs and then it will open up your awareness as a result of it. So 4-6 is the one with the most research on for 2 minutes. That's in for four, out for six, is a 10 second breath,
Is
which
four or
is
six, and I want to clear out any ignorance I have. I'd have related that as called heart coherence breathing. Just if guys
Yes.
are checking, okay.
Yeah, because most of the research that comes from it is from a group called the Heart Math Institute, and they call it heart coherence. They did a lot of the research on it. Now you could, it doesn't necessarily have to be 4-6. It can, they actually found that it could be 5-5, but it's a 10-second breathing pattern, which is 6 breaths a minute. And a breath pattern that's in and around 6 breaths a minute, to be specific, it's 5.5 breaths a minute, connects heart and the heart waves to the breath pattern to the brain waves. And bring it can increase HRV, which is a measurement of stress in the body, by increase and improve it by 10 points within one session, which is a rapid change in the nervous system. Yeah. So if you're sitting there and you're like you're finding it struggling to listen to your wife and to your partner, and you're finding it difficult to hold that space, just even as you're just sitting there, breathe in for four. Breathe out for six, breathe in for four, breathe out for six. And as you do that, then your attention will come back online and you'll be able to refocus in on what's going on and hold that space again.
You
Or
remind.
if it's a conversation that you're about to have that you know you're going into, do it before you go into and you'll come into it in a much better state.
Yeah, that's a potent thing. I suppose there again, it gets back to your idea. It's like it's training. It's you do the training. I know it's like was it train intense in the dojo and then smile at life, or you had some. I read
Yeah,
something you
it
were
was
some.
a, it was an ancient samurai saying, which is the samurai cry in the dojo and laugh in the battlefield.
Yeah, I really, really like that. Leo, guys listening in, just like guys that sort of like geeking out, their curiosity has been piqued up by you. Is there, can they do like a self-diagnostic on that? Just how would that look like, just for their breathing rate? You know, if a guy just wanted to check it out, is there any sort of a criteria to set up, and he just like sets a clock and self-assesses his breath rate to see if is he floating around the six, or is he more up at that 12 or 15? How does that
Well,
look?
so you're not looking for your subconscious, in other words, when you're not thinking about it, breath rate to be at six breaths a minute. That's not what will happen. And a lot of breathing coaches think that's what should happen, but it's not. So what you're asking me is your, because as soon as you bring consciousness to it, you'll automatically change it, right? As soon
Okay,
as you
so.
bring awareness to it, it will automatically change it. So becoming, now you could become aware of your breathing pattern and just go, do you know what? Set a stopwatch for a minute and just count my breaths. And when the stopwatch beep or when the countdown timer beeps, then that'll be the number of breaths you're at. And that might be your and I would repeat that, you know, three, four, you could repeat that 3 times a day for a week, and then you'll get your average breathing count. And at least you know where you are at on average over the course of that week. And then your breathing, your individualized breathing plan could be, do you know what? All I need to do is lower that a little bit. So let's say it ends up at 12 breaths per minute, then a 10 breath per minute breathing practice is what will work for you. A 2 breath per minute will be a stronger response for you, right? If you're at 18 breaths a minute, you don't have to drop straight down to 6 breaths a minute. You might just drop it to 12 breaths a minute and do something that's very manageable for you. And that's a very easy way to step down your breathing and to gently bring it down without needing to force it down and think, you know, you don't need to be at any place to be a hero with the breathing. It's just change it a little bit any way you can, and that will improve it. There's a neuro, he's a neurophysiologist. He's done a lot of research in the field. Jack Feldman. His name over in the States. And he says, when your brain is in a pattern, it's like it's stuck in a rut, whether that's a depressed pattern or whether that's a hyperactive pattern that you can't focus and concentrate, it's stuck in a rut. And what a rut is it's a track that a horse makes when it goes around in a circle the whole time. And so as it walks around the same part of the field, it makes an imprint on it. And then after a while, it just naturally follows that same rut. So it doesn't get out of that track. So the way you get out of a rut is you just do something different. So whether that's a little bit bigger and faster or whether it's slower, doesn't matter. Just change the pattern, and that will change your mind.
Beautiful. Bringing it down to practical steps coming into landing, I suppose, guys that want to investigate a little bit further, I go the route I went, sort of YouTube, stick in heart coherence or box breathing. There's plenty of stuff there. Leo, could you speak? Because I know before coming on, I did a specific program as like guided by you, but I believe you have a fundamentals of Breathworks training pack, an online course that guys can do self-guided, self-paced. Could you speak a little bit to that? I just really want to leave the window open so guys can learn a bit more about what's on offer there.
Yeah, I brought that in for when I say motivated people, people who want to change their breath. So I have a training app that I use with coaching clients, and that then I designed this program for. So this is one where I've created a structured breathing program over 16 weeks. It gives you the exercise. First of all, you'll do your assessment, which is a questionnaire, and then some breathing assessments. So you'll have an awareness of where you are at the start, and you'll be able to look back at that at the end to see how far you've come. Then it takes you through three phases of breath training over 16 weeks. So phase one is the mechanics, and it looks to open up your breathing mechanics. In other words, help you to use your diaphragm well, be able to breathe into your rib cage effectively, and be able to let go of your exhale, which is all important to restore your baselines of breathing mechanics. The next phase then is into the physiology, or improving your tolerance of carbon dioxide. Believe it or not, breathing has nothing to do with oxygen in a practical everyday sense. It's got to do with carbon dioxide. Because what carbon dioxide does is it holds the hand of oxygen in the red blood cell and takes it from the blood into the cells where you need oxygen. That's what carbon dioxide does. So by building up a tolerance of CO2, you help to get more oxygen into the cells of your body, which is really, really important. That's a golden nugget of breathing, is getting oxygen to your cells. And then the last phase is the rhythms of breathing, or the breathwork experience. And that really helps you to, it helps with the psychophysiology, or how your brain works and interacts with your body. This is the likes of the Wim Hof method and holotropic breathing and that work. So I bring it into a progressive part of that. And the point of the training then is to help, now that you've built a lot of baselines, now you can start to address the emotional aspect of breathing in particular, and to become more friendly and okay with whatever emotions and sensations come up in your body. Mm-hmm. And that whole thing is like, that program, I think it's $59.99, it's like €60. It's on my website. And there's a Facebook community there to ask any questions, and I'm on it. And yes, it's just real simple. And it's for me, it's a gold standard. I will say, it's for committed people. So I don't, when I train people, like I want them to experience amazing health, amazing vitality, amazing energy. So I don't give half programs. I don't do, oh, feel better by doing this. I don't want you to feel better. I don't want to put a plaster on it. I want you to restore yourself and to know how great it feels to feel great. So in that sense, I say it upright, like the training is a commitment of between 10 and 20 minutes. And then that progresses to 2 to 3 times a day minimum, over the course of the 4 months. But trust me, if you do the training, you will get the results without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
I'm there for support if you need it.
I can hold my hand up. The guys aren't seeing my hand because of the podcast, but I can hold my hand up and testify. It's working with you, Leo, and it was like this surprise element. I came, you know, to overcome symptoms of asthma, but it was the far-reaching effect, obviously from an inner world mastery, just my inner world experience of life as a man, but that just allowed me to show up and be a husband that Matilda's actually safer around. She's loving life with me, thankfully, you know, like 2.5 years later, really directly as a result of that. And the breathwork has been just a cornerstone for me and for my relationship with my daughters, especially our eldest daughter. There was many years of, you know, you mentioned and bowed to your experiences, but my ways of unconsciously coming and building up stress and nervous system, no self-awareness, and I was exploding, nice guy, nice guy, nice guy, exploding. And that can be quite a common pattern that a lot of guys will relate with. Breathwork has just been the core foundation for me that has helped me show up and bit by bit. And this podcast was a result of it and my work in the world. So it's been an honor and a privilege to have you in, Leo. Thank you so much, guys. Like Leo there, I definitely had to just point, let him just open the space for Leo to speak to that online course. I don't know of every single course in the world that's available. I don't know of a higher leverage place you could place your attention, your energy, your time, your financial resources for what you can get back. I know Leo sets it there. I love that. I mean, you got to be committed. You got to be dedicated. But I know the guys listening in, they're in that pool of men. So yeah, I couldn't point you in a more potent place on the online world than Leo's website. Leo, thank you so much. Such an honor.
What I say as well, Mark, is even the only better value option as you get is hopefully my book will be out either the end of this year or early next year, 2023, where I've laid it all out, much like that online course, I've laid it all out in a book format and written about it. But that's kind of layer two. If you're just coming to breathing and want to go, okay, Leo, I've heard Leo speak and that's great. And yeah, he said it affects every area. But I'd highly recommend the book called Breath by James Nestor. Incredible piece of writing. He's an author and he will take you on an interesting journey because he can write beautiful English and show you just how powerful breathing is. On the whole of the human body and spirit. It's an incredible book. So before mine comes out, go after that one for Christmas.
Cool. Thanks for that, Leo. Thanks for coming in. Who knows, in the distant future, might have your excellent self back in. I'd love to, I'll read your book first, but I might pick your brains at that on a date.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about all things related to being a great husband as well. And like the breathing is one aspect, but even just talking about relationships and, you know, how things are managed and that aspect of things, which is something you don't get as much off me in podcasts because people go, okay, breathing. But it's just a very interesting podcast that you have. And I'm really interested by it as well, Mark. So fair play to you for opening up that conversation on it.
Thanks for that, Leo. Guys listening in, you know, like the mantra, the tagline we have is better husbands today, better world tomorrow. I mean, your difference is that important, whether it's, you know, just acting on a curiosity after a conversation with Leo and just those so many insights. You know, the invitation is whatever the insights are there for you is to find a creative way now to implement them. You know, just commit to just trying, you know, read that book, try that new, you know, that new breathwork technique, or just implement in your own creative way. Small steps lead to amazing things with a compound effect over time. With that, thank you for your time and attention. Go have a beautiful kingly day.